Not all electric vehicles are designed the same. Toyota Electric is built to work for you. Grounded in years of proven engineering, it feels intuitive from the start. The Toyota BZ for smooth, everyday driving. The BZ Woodland for all-terrain capability. The all-new CHR for an instant, responsive drive. It's not just electric, it's Toyota Electric. We make it easy. Toyota, let's go places.
A burst pipe, a dead water heater, the AC calling it quits. Who do you call? HomeServe is an easy way to handle unexpected home repairs with plans covering stuff basic homeowners insurance usually won't. Instead of scrambling for a contractor, you make one call to get the repair process started. Join the millions of customers who trust HomeServe right now. Go to homeserve.com/podcast for 50% less your first year. That's homeserve.com/podcast. Savings compared to renewal price. Void in Florida.
Imagine you finally have a free day out on the town. You're about to enjoy a nice lunch when you get the alert that a window's been broken at home and you're miles away. These are the wake-up calls that remind us, in 1 second, everything can change. ADT security systems are built for those moments. They help keep your home safer with 24/7 monitoring. No one wants to feel unsafe at home or vulnerable when you're away. And with ADT, you won't. Their systems are professionally installed by trained technicians, so you can trust them to watch out for your home from day one. ADT has the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry, and the ADT Plus app lets you keep tabs on your home from anywhere you have service. You'll get the alerts that matter about your home safety. Don't wait to prepare your home for an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com. That's ADT.com. Or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP. That's 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
Jovan, boo-ha! Boo-ha!
Yo, yo, I'm Jovan Buha, NBA reporter for Buha's Block, and welcome to another episode. On today's show, we are doing our first state of the Lakers of the season, 10 storylines coming out of the preseason, 10 storylines entering the regular season, 10 things that are on my mind. We have a lot to discuss. Before we get started, you guys know the drill though. For those watching on YouTube, please be sure to hit that subscribe button, turn on channel notifications, and like and comment on this video. For those listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice, please be sure to follow, download, and leave a 5-star review. Also, make sure you are checking out our YouTube memberships, as well as the Discord channel. Also, one quick clarification, Rui Hachimura is extension eligible through June 30th. So that is the final day that he can extend right before he enters unrestricted free agency. I did misspeak a couple of weeks ago and say that it was the 20th. I mixed it up with the rookie scale extension, which is today at 6 p.m. Eastern time for all of the players who are eligible for their second contracts. So Rui is Lakers have the full season to evaluate Rui's fit with Luka, with Austin, etc., and they can extend him right before then. Typically, teams like to use this as like a soft deadline to try to come to some form of an extension, but technically they can extend them at any point this season and even past the playoffs into the beginning of the summer. I got some questions on that on X and wanted to clarify that and apologize for mixing the dates up. So not October 20th for Rui, but actually June 30th. But with that said, let's get into storyline number one. And for me, I'm going to read some numbers here that I think if you want to find some kernels of optimism for the Lakers, I think this is the primary driver for any Lakers optimism going into the regular season. It's got to be Luka and the offense. And looking at these numbers here, so with Luka Doncic on the floor in the preseason, he only played in two games, about six quarters worth, and it was against Phoenix and Sacramento, two teams who at full strength are borderline play-in teams, but they were not at full strength in either matchup. So some caveats apply, but with Luka on the floor in the preseason, the Lakers had a 128.8 offensive rating, by far the best number of any player who played for the Lakers in the preseason. Also would be the best offensive rating of all time, which is again why we are applying some caveats here, but it's no surprise that the Lakers offense is going to hum at a higher level with Luka on the floor. Defensive rating with Luka was 118.3. Net rating was plus 10.6, which was also the best mark on the team. So no surprise that the Lakers were much better in the preseason in the six quarters that Luka played in. Usage rate or usage percentage of 37.7%, a team high, and that would be one of the highest marks of Luka's career, and then a 101.98 pace. So they played a little bit faster with Luka on the floor, definitely faster than they played with him last season. They were about just under 99 possessions as a team last season. The pace is just how many possessions you're extrapolating it out, possessions with the player on the floor. So looking at this, like I think there is a clear correlation between Luka being on the floor and the Lakers offense looking at its best. And for as much as Austin has improved and for as great as Gabe shot the ball in the preseason, it's just at a different level with Luka on the floor. He's a top four at worst player in the league. He is, in my opinion, the second best offensive player in the league just behind Jokic, and he could potentially pass him this year. I think Luka looked great. And now let's pull up his actual preseason numbers, where again, six quarters, not the best competition, but Luka's per 36 averages, which should be a little bit more than he's playing in the regular season, but maybe without LeBron, his minutes bump up a little bit in that like 35, 36 range. 36.8 points per 36 minutes, 7.9 rebounds, 8.5 assists. So those are all in line with his career averages and with his typical output. Obviously, the scoring is a bit higher. 0.7 steals, that's actually lower than, you know, Luka's typically a guy in that at least one, if not 1.5, even sometimes close to two steals per game range. 5.3 turnovers was high, and you saw him still developing that rhythm, particularly with DeAndre Ayton in their two-man game in pick and roll chemistry, but also even with some of his kickout passes and stuff. There's a little bit of rustiness there. He had not played in about a month the first time he suited up for the Lakers in, you know, competitive non-practice games, but almost 53% shooting on threes. Again, the usage percentage nearly 38%, pace nearly 102 possessions per game, and then true shooting percentage just under 70%, which is ridiculous for such a high usage player. So I thought Luka looked great over his six quarters of the preseason. He does look quicker. He's scoring at all three levels at an elite clip, and he's getting to the free throw line. It's just he puts you in these impossible binds, impossible situations. He forces these impossible decisions for defenses with his ability to manipulate in the pick and roll. So if there's one thing to take away, in my opinion, big picture from the preseason in a positive sense for the Lakers, it's they looked great overall with Luka on the floor. Their offense performed at a team best level. They just overall performed at their best level with Luka on the floor. That is to be expected, right? But if they had struggled with Luka on the floor or something, like certainly the defense could have been better. 118 defense rating is not good. It's actually what would be, you know, one of the worst marks in the league, but we only saw it in a couple games. But Luka looked like MVP level Luka, a guy that's going to be a first team All-NBA All-Star starter level guy. And with LeBron out, the Lakers are going to need that version of Luka. And so far, he's looked like that player. Now, storyline number two is going to be the Lakers defense. And we'll say the state of the defense right now is TBD, but I think there was a lot to be discouraged by. I thought there was a lot of troubling things. And now with the offense, like it's twofold here, because on the one hand, you could argue that not having Luka, obviously not having LeBron, the offense is going to take a certain hit, and it did. The Lakers were actually worse offensively than defensively in the preseason. They were 28th in offensive rating and 23rd in defensive rating. So they actually underperformed more offensively, and I think you could attribute that to Luka and LeBron. LeBron missed all six games. Luka missed four of the six games. Austin missed a couple games. You take those three out for portions of the preseason, and this offense is going to underperform. That's just how it is. Like the Lakers do not have they have a lot of playmaking depth, but they do not have a lot of shot creation depth beyond those three. So it just falls off a cliff when you get into that Ayton, Rui, Gabe level of shot creation. The offense is just not going to function at a proper level. So there certainly could be some ripple effect or impact from the offense being not as effective without the Lakers' best offensive players for a lot of the preseason. However, they actually defended better without, like, the team defense overall was a 112 defensive rating. And so they actually defended worse with Luka on the floor than with him off. A lot of noise in all these numbers, but I just, like, that was an argument that I originally made, was thinking about, was like, okay, well, if they don't have their guys, they're obviously going to, it's going to have an impact on like the offense, but then you're maybe turning the ball over more, or you're not scoring as frequently. It's going to lead to transition opportunities for the for the opponent. And certainly that's true to an extent, but the Lakers' best defenders are not their three best offensive players. So in theory, like, those groups should have been more grinded out, like, defense type pairings and lineup configurations. And that was just not the case. So looking at the Lakers' defense here, 23rd in defensive rating, 27th in opponent effective field goal percentage, which is a form. It's basically true shooting percentage, taking out the free throw percentage, because you can't control if your opponent is making free throws or not, but that's just looking at 2-point percentage and 3-point percentage with a proper weighting for threes compared to twos. So opponent effective field goal percentage, 27th. So that's discouraging. 11th in defensive rebound percentage, which this has been the biggest area of growth with DeAndre Ayton in the lineup. I looked at their numbers last year and they were middle of the pack post Luka trade. So this is a little bit better than that. And if they can hover around 10, 11, 12, I think that's a healthy place to be for this group. Like, of course, you want to be better, but I think realistically, if they could be around that top 10 mark, I think that's a pretty good place for this group. Opponent second chance points, 15th, and that correlates to some extent with the defensive rebound percentage, because you're not giving up as many offensive rebounds, though when teams got offensive rebounds, they were able to score, and that's why that's a little bit higher in terms of second chance points allowed. Opponent turnover percentage, 23rd. So they did not force a lot of turnovers. They were not as active in the playmaking defensively as they could have been. Opponent points off of turnovers, which is opponent scoring off of the Lakers turnovers, 11th. So that's not, you know, too problematic of a number there. But then here's where we get into some problems. Opponent fast break points, 26th. This has been a 15-year period of LA basically being a bottom 5 to 10 transition defense for various reasons. And then opponent points in the paint, 27th. Last year, that was actually a strength post-Luka trade, was LA was able to zone up the paint. And remember, they had the aggressive help schemes and rotations, and they were able to be, I think they were like 12th or so in opponent points in the paint. And this is just the preseason, and there's no LeBron, who is a key part of the help defense and was a big part of that success post-Luka trade last year. But those two numbers, fast break points, points in the paint, like, that passed the eye test of teams were running on the Lakers. And once they got by the initial line of defense, whether it was in a pick and roll situation or a weak side, you know, kick out, or honestly, sometimes just beating someone off of the dribble, the help defense and the help rotations were non-existent. The guys were miscommunicating on when to switch. Guys were miscommunicating when to rotate. I thought the layers of the Lakers defense were not, it was like sometimes the initial, like the first layer would do its job. Even sometimes a second layer would do its job. And that's where you'd see a guy like a DeAndre Ayton or a Luka or an Austin or a Gay, like whoever would poke a dribble loose or maybe even take a charge or something. And that was like the second line or the second layer of defense there. But once you even got past that, and it would be like the third layer or another rotation, or it was like the longer you could kind of force the Lakers to work defensively, they'd eventually have some sort of breakdown, some sort of miscommunication. And so there's been a shift with the Lakers where they have been a bit more selective with the switching. They are playing more drop coverage. And I think adjusting to Ayton's defensive style is its own process. And Marcus Smart only played in a couple of games. LeBron didn't play in any games. So I think some of their more impactful defenders either weren't available or aren't going to be available to start the season. But my greatest concern outside of just health with this group, which we saw during training camp with so many guys in and out of games and practices and whatnot, and even entering the season with only essentially 11 of their 14 official roster players available, like health with this group is number one concern, right? Like that has to be. But number two for me by far is the defensive end, because at least based on what we've seen, they could defend at a much higher level in the regular season. And I do expect it to get better. It's just like right now, I was kind of projecting them in that like 13th to 17th range defensively entering the season. I think now I would bump that to probably 17th to 22nd. And there's a big difference between whether they're around league average or they're bottom 8 or 9 defensively. Like that's going to determine whether this team could push for a home court, whether this team can win close to 50 games, how far this team could go in the playoffs. Because offensively, to go back to the first point, I think they're going to be a great offense, easily top 10, probably top 5, and maybe with a shot at top 3. The defensive end, though, they have looked like a team that's going to be a bottom 10 defense, and there's just not much to be encouraged by other than some like flashes of and flickers of individual performance and playmaking from guys like Vando and Smart and Ayton and Gabe. Like there's been a little bit there, but not enough and not consistent enough to be even an average defense. And this is where my biggest concern is with this group is the pressure on the offense is going to be at such a high level where they're going to have to win a lot of 128 to 123 games. And I think they can do it. And I think they could do it at a high enough level. But when we start talking about how they compare to OKC and Denver and Minnesota and New York and Cleveland and some of these other top 7-8 teams in the league, that's where I think them having such a clear weakness on the defensive end, especially in comparison to those teams, that's the little bit of a yellow flag into a red flag for me. But who knows? Maybe this week they come out against Golden State and Minnesota and defend their asses off and we're having a completely different conversation and JJ is able to scheme up some things for those particular matchups. I want to leave some room for them to prove me wrong or you know, pleasantly surprised, I guess. But as of right now, the defense has been very concerning. They've struggled at point of attack. They've struggled on the wing. They've struggled really outside of defensive rebounding. They have struggled in virtually every other. They don't foul. That's, I guess, one thing that could drive opposing fan bases crazy that the Lakers get to the free throw line a lot and they don't foul. So that's like another thing they've done well. But in terms of getting back in transition, I think the help, the communication, all that stuff is not close to where it needs to be. And that's going to be the thing I'm looking at most closely going into opening night is how are they defending and can they get back to it resembling at all last season?
Looking for a simpler way to explore medical weight loss options? Orderly Meds connects you online with licensed healthcare providers so you can learn about GLP-1 treatment options from home. It's convenient, straightforward, and designed to fit your lifestyle. Get started today at orderlymeds.com/podcasts. That's orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Again, orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Results may vary. Consult a licensed healthcare provider to determine if treatment is appropriate for you. Restrictions apply.
Little Bob here. This summer, shop the latest small space solutions at Bob's Discount Furniture. From retro chic bedroom sets to stylish space-conscious Bob-o-pedic sofas, it's all at Bob's, where America shops for furniture.
Look around. What do you see? Cars. Lots of them. And guess what? They're probably on AutoTrader. Whether you're into timeless classics or the latest trends, did somebody say solar-powered, eco-friendly, vegan leather-wrapped, aromatherapy-scented, disco ball-equipped self-driving car? If you see it on the road, you can likely find it on AutoTrader. Big cars, small cars, blue cars, new cars and used cars, electric cars, and one day, maybe even flying cars. With millions of options to choose from, buying a car becomes a whole lot easier. See it, find it. Auto Trader.
Storyline number 3 is the new starting lineup. And it might be a temporary lineup. That's what JJ Redick indicated, that they might be going matchup based at least to start the season. But as of right now, it is looking like DeAndre Ayton, Rui Hachimura, Gabe Vincent, Austin Reeves, and Luka Doncic, with Luka and Austin being the primary ball handlers and guards offensively, and then Austin and Gabe being the primary backcourt defenders defensively, with Luka, Rui, and Ayton matching up with the front court. And I'm going to pull up the defensive roles from B-Ball Index. Shout out to Krangis and B-Ball Index here. This is how I see it playing out on the defensive end. DeAndre Ayton will be the defensive center, and his role will be as an anchor big. He has functioned as a mobile big and an anchor big throughout his career, but I think with the way that the Lakers are using him and the way that he has looked, I view him more as an anchor big currently. I think Luka will technically be the power forward defensively. He'll be more of a helper, more of the low man who's going to read the defense, use his basketball IQ to court map, and then to be a defensive playmaker with strips, with rotating over. I was going to say verticality, not necessarily jumping verticality, though he did have a nice block on Zach LaVine in the Sacramento game, but more so just putting his arms up, being big around the basket and leveraging his size. Rui will be the small forward defensively. I think offensively, these two will switch, and really Luka's a point guard offensively. Offensively, the roles are different, but defensively, Rui is going to be the primary wing stopper. So I view him as the small forward who is used as the wing stopper. If there's a guy in that like 6'6 to 6'9 range that is a more of a wing shot creator, that's going to be Rui's primary assignment. He will also guard some fours. So like I think Minnesota is an interesting example here where I would suspect if it's Minnesota, Rui's probably on Julius Randle and Luka is on Jaden McDaniels. But then if it's like a Boston, Rui's going to be taking that Jaylen Brown assignment. And I don't know Boston's starting lineup off the top of my head yet, but Luka will be more in a helping role as the low man. Then with the backcourt, Austin will be more of the off-ball secondary playmaker, ball handler, defender, chaser role here from B-Ball Index. And then Gabe will be the point of attack guy guarding the primary ball handler, often point guards, but we'll not be surprised if he gets some time on, say, I think he'll get Steph against Golden State, and then he'll get maybe Ant against Minnesota. Lakers could also go with Austin or Rui, depending on how they want to do it. And they're also going to be switching a bunch. So I'm sure Minnesota will try to manipulate the matchups that way. But this makes sense to me defensively, particularly against Golden State. I do not love this long term, and looking at the roles and kind of having it written out here, I think Ayton is being used in the right way. I think Luka is being used in the right way. And I think Austin is being used in the right way. Where I have a couple of issues is I don't think Gabe Vincent is a starting level point of attack guy. I think he's more of a bench point of attack guy. Like that's the right role for him technically, but I think he's more appropriate as a bench player rather than a starter. I don't think he gives you quite that level of point of attack that you want from your best perimeter defender. Like I don't think Gabe should be the best perimeter defender in a starting group, in a serious starting group. I think him as a second best guy is appropriate, even third best, probably more appropriate, but the best perimeter defender on the floor, that to me is a little bit, like you're asking a little bit too much of Gabe, in my opinion. And then Rui as a wing stopper, we've seen this before. I just don't think he is cut out to, like, I'm guessing in the Golden State matchup, he's probably guarding Jimmy. And I just don't love that matchup for the Lakers. Like maybe Jimmy is a guy who can sometimes use his shoulders and his body a little bit more. And that's where Rui does have the strength to absorb that. But in general, I do not think Rui should be the primary wing stopper. And this is kind of the role right now because LeBron is out. Although I think even if LeBron was playing, Rui would still probably have that role. But this is where I think a Marcus or a Vando makes a lot more sense because they can slide between both the Gabe role and the Rui role and be the point of attack guy or be the wing stopper. Now, offensively, Gabe is at a different level than both of them right now with the way he shot the ball in the preseason and in general with his shooting, the movement, the pace he comes off screens and just some of the different wrinkles they could use offensively. I get why he's starting, and that's why I made the case after the Lakers-Kings game that to me it was more of an offensive thing almost where Gabe just adds this different element to the, like right now he's their best movement shooter, like you know, with the way Dalton's shooting, the way Jake LaRavia is shooting, and just with his skill set, Gabe is the best movement shooter and adds a wrinkle that no one else can really match in the Lakers rotation right now. But, and he does provide a certain level, like he's a good defender. I would say he's a good defender, but I think he's better in the context of being a bench defender rather than a starting defender. And he doesn't have the scalability to scale up and defend wings the way that Vando and Smart can. Now, Vando, I've talked about it. It seems like I'm going to touch on him a little bit later, but seems like he's in a certain role right now with JJ because of the offense and just the limitations there. So it doesn't seem like he's being strongly considered, at least right now, for a permanent starting role. The other guy would be Marcus, who I was really impressed by with the Sacramento game. He's not the shooter that Gabe is. He's not the overall offensive scorer or shot creator, but I think he's a better ball handler. I think he's a better passer, and he's bigger. He can scale up more against wings. So I still think that the process right now determining the fifth starter is sound, and there is a lot of overlap between Gabe and Marcus. And you could, depending on how you view it, go in one direction or the other. For me, I would lean more on the defensive end. I think Marcus is a better overall player on the defensive end. And so long-term, I still stand by Marcus should be in the starting group here over Gabe, long-term over Rui, and then LeBron sliding in and them having Luka, Austin, Marcus, LeBron, and Ayton. I have not changed from that perspective. I thought Vando had more of a chance than apparently he does. We saw when JJ actually had to decide on a lineup in rotations, Vando was, and maybe some of it's the injury stuff. He was coming off of the quad injury, but if he was clear to go, like with how conservative the Lakers have been with guys and injuries and stuff in the preseason, I feel like if Vando couldn't have gone for whatever reason, the Lakers just would have held him out, as unfortunate as that would have been. So I don't know how much of that actually is a factor here. For what it's worth, the starters were +5 in 10 minutes together against the Kings B/C squad. They did have Zach LaVine and Dennis Schroeder out there, but they also had Drew Eubanks and Nick Clifford, who I really like. He looks like a future stud, if not right away. I don't get what the Kings are doing with, like, Neat Clifford should be someone who's starting or at least playing a prominent bench role and just thrown into the fire instead of having to jostle with Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan, now Russell Westbrook, Sabonis, all these guys. Like, they just have too many, Malik Monk, like, they have too many mouths to feed there offensively. But the Lakers were +5 in 10 minutes against that group. I would say overall it was not the best debut for that lineup. Like, it did look a little small, especially in help defense situations or some of the switches against Sacramento. But this is the starting group for the foreseeable future. JJ did say it could be matchup based, so maybe we see something different. Maybe against Minnesota it is Vando or it is Smart and that player gets the Edwards assignment. But for now, it's looking like this is the group. And then that brings me to storyline number 4, which is Gabe Vincent. And Gabe Vincent has been arguably the most impressive role player for LA in the preseason. He's in that conversation. I think it's between him and Vando. But Gabe's per 36 preseason numbers resemble some of his Miami per 36 numbers. 26 points per game. It's not sustainable, but shows that, like, Gabe can be a bucket. When Gabe is hot, we saw it against Dallas, like, Gabe can score in flurries. 1.6 rebounds, that's another argument for me against Gabe starting, is I just don't think he's quite the rebounder that the Lakers need, and you're putting a lot on Luka and Ayton to carry the defensive glass there. 4.8 assists, though, solid number per 36 from Gabe. I've been impressed with the playmaking and just his ability to run the offense at times, in bursts. 1.2 steals, 2.4 turnovers, 56% shooting on threes. Totally unsustainable, but again, that shows, like, we know Gabe can be a streaky guy, and right now he's in one of his hot streaks. 23% usage percentage. I think it's a little high for what we'll expect during the regular season. Pace 101.5, and then true shooting percentage just under 74%, which is also entirely unsustainable, but again, just a testament to the heater that Gabe is currently on. But Gabe has resembled Miami Gabe, and I made this point after the Lakers-Kings game. If we were basing it purely off of merit and performance, and you're comparing Gabe to Marcus and Vando and Laravia, he's arguably been the best player out of those four. And if that was the true competition for the fifth starter spot, with, I thought Rui was going to be the fifth starter if LeBron was available. With LeBron out, Rui's the clear LeBron replacement in that sense. And then if it's a fifth starter competition between the aforementioned players, you can make a case, a strong case, really, that Gabe has been, I mean, easily been the best offensive player out of that quartet. But then when looking at the defense, like, We only saw a couple games with Marcus. Vando, I would put ahead of him defensively, but the two-way balance, and JJ's talked about trying to balance lineups. You could make that case for Gabe Vincent. I think JJ did make that case for Gabe Vincent. The biggest thing with Gabe right now is the Lakers desperately need floor spacing and catch and shoot ability, and he has provided that at a high level. I was very surprised, just like everybody else, that Gabe ended up starting, but once you actually looked at what the Lakers needed from that starting group and how he performed in the preseason, it did make more sense. Again, longer term, I'm skeptical of it. I think that he's a little bit too small and not good enough defensively for what the Lakers need from that fifth starter spot. I think it needs to be Smart or Vando. If we're factoring in both sides of the ball, I think Smart is the clear choice, but we'll see, right? Like, I think Gabe against Steph, that's going to be that's a more appropriate matchup for him, slithering around screens and being quick with it and just being a technically sound defender. I think that's in Gabe's wheelhouse. So I get it for opening night, but I'm not sure how long he should be in the starting group moving forward. And then next storyline for me is DeAndre Ayton's defense. And I'm going to pull up DeAndre Ayton's numbers here. So per 36 numbers in the preseason, he played in five of the six games, 13.1 points, 13.4 rebounds, 2.7 assists, 1.5 steals, 2.7 blocks, 2.7 turnovers, 17.1% usage percentage, 102.29 pace, and 55-ish percent true shooting. Some interesting things here with his numbers. The points, if we extrapolate this out over the course of a full season, lowest points per 36 minutes of DeAndre Ayton's career. He's a walking 17 and 10. So the 13, like he's less involved offensively. The 13.4 rebounds, though, would be a career high. The 2.7 assists would be a career high. 1.5 steals would be a career high. And 2.7 blocks would be a career high. Also worth noting, the 2.7 turnovers would be a career high. But I thought it was interesting to look at DeAndre and just the way that he has impacted the game in multiple ways. So again, rebounding career high, assists, steals, and blocks, also the turnovers. But like, he's contributing in, you know, the rebounding on both sides of the ball, the short roll playmaking, and being a playmaker defensively in the pick and roll with tipping passes and poking dribbles loose, blocking shots. Like when guys have tested him, when they have challenged him, he has blocked shots. He has altered shots. I think he's protect the rim well, specifically in drop coverage. If I have some nits to pick with his defense overall, I think the up to touch and just reading sort of what the ball handler or person coming off of a screen is doing could be a little bit better. I think he's been a little bit too low, and it's something JJ's talked about a little bit during the preseason. I also think his, like, when it's the ball handler going downhill directly at him, I think the defense has been really impressive, and that's where he's been able to get some of these steals and deflections and blocks. When it's more of a, let's say there's like an initial action and it's a pick and pop or even a pick and roll, and then Ayton kind of gets a little bit out of the center of the mix, and now he has to make a read or a rotation or like a second effort play defensively, I haven't loved that. But I think there's been times where, like, if DeAndre Ayton is dragged out from the rim and you're just away from the paint, the Lakers defense, like, teams are looking at it like that they are licking their lips. They're chomping at the bit to get to the rim against the Lakers, because if the last line of defense is Rui, Luka, Austin, Gabe, you're probably going to score and or get fouled, or you're going to have like a dump off pass for a cut, or you're going to get an offensive rebound or something. Like, that's a very appealing defense to go at. So the Lakers need to find ways to keep Ayton closer to the basket outside of playing up to touch in actual pick and roll. When he is not involved in the primary action, they need to find ways to keep him closer to the paint, keep him closer to the rim, because once he gets dragged out, it's a layup line. So that's really my only thing with him, but I've been really encouraged. Like, overall, I would give him, I think, probably a B+ defensively. And there are some limitations there, right? Like, he's not Anthony Davis. He's not Rudy Gobert. He's not Victor Wembanyama. He's not Walker Kessler. He's not, you know, pick your favorite rim protecting big, but I think he can be solid as a rim protector overall. I think the early returns have been positive, and I think if everyone else is doing their job and the Lakers are finding the right balance of defense and offense, I think they can have a competent to like league average-ish defense with Ayton out there. I think there is a real limitation. I'm not saying it's going to be top 10 or top 12. I do have some concerns, clearly. But I think he's largely done his job. And then he's also been buying in, not forcing things offensively, playmaking a bit in the short role. And the usage percentage and points per 36 would both be career lows. And I think that that is a realistic view into like just Ayton's not going to be as involved as he was in Phoenix or Portland. The Lakers have a lot of mouths to feed. They don't even have LeBron yet, right? So Luka, LeBron, Austin, that's the clear pecking order. And then Ayton's going to be right there with Rui and maybe Gabe now as like the next tier of finisher, shot creator, etc. But I would say overall, DeAndre Ayton has impressed, and I think he has largely bought into his role, and I think that's an encouraging sign going into opening night. Next storyline for me is Austin Reeves, and the story to me is Austin is leveling up, in my opinion, as a scorer, as an ISO shot creator. I thought in three of the four games, he was excellent as a scorer and as a shot creator and in ISO and pick and roll situations and just the decision-making process. He's evolving in terms of the way he sees the floor and reads a defense and the way they're defending him and what his options are and just that menu for what to do offensively, I think is going to a different level. His per 36 averages in the preseason, 25 points per game, just under five rebounds, five assists, 1.3 steals, 4.4 turnovers, too much, too high, and that was an area he struggled in. 23% on threes, also far too low, though I will note that was severely swayed by the final performance against the Kings where he went 0-for-7. He was at 33% through the first three games, so still not a good number, below average, but that is you know, okay compared to 23%, right? Like there's a big gap between those two numbers and obviously influenced by just a rough shooting performance. 29% usage percentage, that will not be that high once LeBron returns, but it could be that high until LeBron returns. 102.94 pace, so almost 103 possessions. And the Lakers played faster with Austin on the floor. That was something that was clear. And he does bring a certain verve to the offense and a 60% true shooting percentage, which is a really good mark. And despite the 3-point struggles, him getting to the free throw line as often as he did. And so Austin has yet to fully put it all together in a game where I thought the first three games he was awesome in terms of shot creation and scoring for himself and not as much with the playmaking and setting the table for his teammates. And then in the final preseason game he played in, really struggled with his shot, went 3-for-15, 0-for-7 on threes, but then had 8 assists. And I thought did a much better job. Like that was by far his best passing game. Some of the reads he was making, I thought it was a real step up from the first three games. So he needs to put it together in both regards, and the Lakers are going to need him at a certain level just because like Luka can only do so much. They're really going to rely on Austin, and we've seen him step up going back to last season, going back to previous seasons. When a star is out, he can assume more usage and do more offensively. And I thought from that perspective, again, it hasn't been put together entirely yet, but I thought there was a lot to be encouraged by his own shot creation and decision-making through the first three and then the playmaking and reads in the last one. So we'll see how quickly or how long it takes him to put it all together. Maybe it's opening night versus Golden State, but I thought Austin was trending in the right direction overall, despite not shooting the ball at an appropriate level. And remember, that's my thing I'm watching with Austin all season is can he be a better catch and shoot guy, a more reliable catch and shoot guy? And so far the answer has been no, but it's been four preseason games.
Summer break is here. I want my kids to have fun, but I also want them to keep their skills sharp. Between vacations and sports, I need something that fits our busy schedule without adding stress. That's why we use IXL. IXL is an award-winning online platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. From pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized, interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's proven to improve grades, and one subscription covers every child in the home, saving us time and money. It's trusted nationwide. And in fact, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Queen Carvania stood haloed by the morning sun. An army hung on her every word.
My champions, I have sold my chariot on Carvana. 'Twas a lovely SUV, an inexplicably queenly offer. They're even coming to the castle to collect it. Tonight, we feast!
An offer you can feast on. Sell your car today on Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
I'm Serena Williams, and I'm healthier on Row. I've lost 34 pounds in a year with GLP-1s, diet, and exercise. On Row, you can access GLP-1 options, including the first FDA-approved GLP-1 pill for weight loss. Go to row.co/journey to see if you qualify. 14 to 20% average weight loss in 1 year in non-diabetics with obesity or overweight with a weight-related medical condition versus 2.2% to 3.1% in placebo arm. Rx only. To stay informed about serious side effects, go to row.co/safety.
Next storyline for me is Jared Vanderbilt, who for me was the most impressive Laker through the first half of the preseason. And I thought especially those first couple games, the Phoenix game with his ability to pressure and then also doing that in the Golden State game, but then even the finishing, and he hits a three, he gets an and one, he had a couple night, you know, put back and a nice drive. Like, there was a lot to like about Vando through the first couple preseason games. I do think overall his impact tailed off. He finished the preseason 2 for 13 on threes, which is 15.7%. So the talk about his shot improving has just not been there. And until that improves, I think it's tough to play him starting level or even 20 plus minutes a night. And that seems to be the way that JJ views it, where in the dress rehearsal, he only played 14 minutes and was tied with Jackson Hayes / Maxi Kleba for the eighth man honors behind Marcus Smart and Jake LaRavia plus the starters. So despite him starting the first three preseason games and there being a lot of optimism, a lot of buzz through training camp, it looks like he is capped right now in more of a middling reserve role. And looking at his numbers, 9.5 points, 8.4 rebounds, 3.8 assists. The playmaking and some of the short roll stuff continues to be impressive with him. 1.5 steals, 1.1 blocks, 2.3 turnovers. But the 15.7% on threes and the 39% true shooting percentage, that is unplay. Like, just based on those two numbers, that's like unplayable for a perimeter player. I can't even process 39% true shooting percentage. Now, with, you know, it's preseason and some of these numbers are wonky, but Vando, like, I think there's been a couple, the finishing overall has probably been a bit better, and that seems to be an area he focused on this offseason and has gotten more comfortable with. But, and that's an encouraging development, but he's got to be able to hit open threes at even like a 31, 32% level, and we'll see if he can do that. But for now, the early returns have not been positive in that regard. And I do think that will cap his ultimate role with this team and what they need, despite them needing his defensive versatility and just defensive acumen so desperately. It's like, if he can't shoot and can't be a threat, it's just hard to play a guy like that. So that's one, like, this started as a very positive development, and then I think we had some cold water poured on the situation with the final preseason game, but we'll see against Golden State, we'll see against Minnesota if Vando can earn a larger role despite the offensive limitations. The next storyline is Marcus Smart beginning to look more like himself. He only played in a couple of preseason games, and unlike Luka, who I think we could actually take some stuff away from both games because he's already played with most of the core before, and the Lakers are gearing their entire offense around Luka, and a lot of it's going to come down to the Luka DeAndre Ayton two-man game. With Marcus Smart, that first game was more of a feel-out game. It was really his first reps with this group, and he didn't even take a shot. And if there's one thing we know about Marcus Smart, he is not shy offensively. And as we saw in the Sacramento game, he will call his own number from time to time. And against Sacramento, he looked far more like himself. And I thought that was a more realistic depiction of what we could expect from Marcus moving forward, where offensively he's going to be a secondary ball handler capable of bringing the ball up the floor, helping run the offense, running a bit of pick and roll as like a second side action guy, can get downhill. He had the D-cell Euro step finish, also had a couple floaters, had a pull-up midi, will take some pull-up threes that are questionable. He had a step-back three that I don't think should be in his wheelhouse in terms of the shots that he is actually attempting, but that is part of what comes with the Marcus Smart experience. But I thought the second, like from the first game to the second game, there was tangible progress in multiple areas. I thought defensively he looked better. I still have real questions about if he can be a point of attack guy against the quickest guards. That might be more of an assignment for a Gabe or a Vando, just because I don't think the foot speed is quite there with Marcus. But against wings, I think he has looked pretty good so far. And I think as he continues to get into better shape and more acclimated, and the Lakers continue to tinker and figure out their defense, I think Marcus Smart is going to play an important role in that. And I think ultimately he should be the fifth starter right now and also longer term once LeBron returns. Next storyline for me is Dalton Connect's shooting struggles continue. And there's actually been, like looking at his numbers, there's actually been some things to be encouraged by with Dalton, where his per 36 averages 12.2 points. That's fine. You'd actually like to see that higher based on the way he's used offensively, but whatever. 5.9 rebounds, though. The rebounding has been a notable strength of his and something that I think is worth highlighting. 3.0 assists is also, like, we've seen the next level for Dalton being like getting downhill and spraying the ball out, making some kick out reads that I think has, like, he's improved in that regard. But 0.2 steals, 1.2 turnovers, 23.5% on threes, 16.7% usage percentage, which should be higher ideally based on his role, 101.94 pace, 45.2% true shooting percentage. That's too low. And the other thing here has been he struggled at the free throw line, and this has been a trend for a little bit too, but shot 70% on free throws in the preseason. And for a guy who is supposed to be an elite shooter, like, that's another area where he should be at least mid 80s, if not higher, based on the type of role and like skill set that he projects with. So with Dalton, it's just he's not been able to put it together. And based on the way that he was used in the dress rehearsal, he looks like the 10th man, which I suspect to be the 11th man once LeBron returns and the group is at full strength or close to it. I think he's going to be a one shift player, maybe a second shift if he performs well in the first shift. But this has now been a trend of both Summer League, Cali Classic, and Las Vegas. And then also in the preseason, his shot has just not been there. Over that sample size, he's been at around 23%. And then you couple in the defensive limitations, and that's putting it kindly. He's impacting the game in other ways with the rebounding and passing, which I have liked as a development for him. It's just the movement shooting, the catch and shoot ability, the decision making off of closeouts and stuff. Like, there's been some progress, but he's just too inconsistent of a shooter at this point and of a scorer to warrant a full-time role and really for the role that he's projected out to be. So I would say among the rotation guys, he continues to be the one, or, you know, fringe rotation to rotation guys, he continues to be the one that has underperformed and been the most disappointing through the preseason. And this has now been a trend that's gone on at least since the summer, although I feel like it started really toward the latter, like, quarter of last season, as he was progressively phased out of the rotation and used more as like the 10th, 11th man, one shift player. Remember, he would play the first 5 minutes of the second quarter. That was it. So Dalton, I've tried not to highlight too much of the disappointing stuff because I don't know how much of it's going to translate, but we do now have this growing sample size with him of just not being quite it for what the Lakers need, really on both sides of the ball. And then the final storyline is Jake LaRavia still figuring out his role. And I think Jake is another guy who I've seen the questions, I've seen the live chat talking about him, and I get there's been a lot of frustration with Jake, but I think so. The shot has not fallen at the level it needs to, and not at the level I expect it to. He's shooting 23% on threes. That, I mean, he was a 40% three-point shooter last year. I expect that will bounce back and regress positively. 44% true shooting percentage, also too low. So that's another area I expect to be better. But looking at his overall numbers, like 11.2 points per 36, that's a little bit lower than you'd want, but I don't think they're going to rely on him a lot as a scorer, more so as a catch and shoot weak side slash second side guy. But 4.7 rebounds, 4.4 assists, 1.5 steals. I think those are all in line with what the Lakers would want from Jake, and maybe a little bit higher of, you know, rebounds per 36, but the assists and the steals have been there. Usage is right around average-ish, and that's in line with what you would expect. Turnovers 2.1 compared to 4.4 assists, like you would take that. So I think people have been a little hard on Jake. I will say that he does have a quirky, funky game. He's not the most athletic player. He's not the quickest player. And from an eye test perspective, I can see why some people are going to be critical or just there's an adjustment period to watching Jake play. I will note that going back to his film last season, I watched basically every possession he played on both sides of the ball as a Grizzly and as a King. And last year he did look a bit quicker, and maybe, I don't know if that's a shape thing or whatever. Like, I don't know what is going on in that regard. I do think he looked quicker and was better at defending down last season, and we'll see if maybe that's something that he plays his way into being able to do that this season. I would say like the guard defense has not been where I thought it would be. He's looked more like a front court and wing defender type rather than a guy who could defend at the one or the two. However, if we compare Jake to, say, Rui, who is a guy that he was being compared to going into the preseason, going into camp, Rui is averaging more points and he is shooting far better than Jake. And that was supposed to be an area they were close in, but obviously up to this point, Jake has struggled with his shot. However, Jake is averaging more rebounds. He is averaging more assists. He is averaging more steals. He's averaging more blocks. And I think that's the part of Jake's game that people sometimes overlook, is I think people have this idea of him as a shooter or a scorer and want a certain thing. And I think he should be able to do that better than he's been able to up to this point. And that I will acknowledge and agree with. I just think he has a well-roundedness to his game that the Lakers don't quite have with a lot of their perimeter players. And when you add in the rebounding, the assists, the defensive playmaking, and the defensive versatility overall, I don't know. And then the size too, it's just like, I think he has a more well-rounded, varied game than Rui. I think factoring in the offensive end, I also think that compared to Vando, he has a more well-rounded game. And with Smart and Gabe, it's close. Like, I think those are probably the Lakers' three best two-way guys, depending on how you view things. But it's just, he's just much bigger than both of those guys. So there's also certain things that he could do because of that, and certain needs he fills that I just think due to their size that there's a limitation there with Gabe and Marcus. So I get some of the Laravia criticism and skepticism. I think the shot is going to fall at a higher rate. Now, if it does not fall and he continues, like if he ends up being like a 34% three-point shooter, that should affect his role, and that might be a limiting factor for him. And that's, you know, that changes his value. I think ultimately, like, he needs to be a high 30s at a minimum, if not 40, 41, 42% 3-point shooter. And again, I think the offense could certainly be better from him, and the defense aesthetically is not always going to be the best, but I do think he largely is trying. He's largely in the right spots. There is a positional versatility there, and there's been a bit of some defensive playmaking with the steals and whatnot. So I think Laravia is a work in progress. I also don't think the Lakers have a clear vision yet on, or a clear answer on what his role is on both sides of the ball. It has felt like he's kind of been in no man's land at times on both sides. And he's the one guy that, like with Ayton, I think the role is pretty clear. With Smart, I think the role is pretty clear. With Laravia, I think they're still kind of figuring it out. And because he is a jack of all trades who could do a little bit of everything at least a decent level, that sometimes kind of puts you in a weird spot where you don't have a clear identity on the team. And I think the Lakers really need to figure that out sooner than later. But I would say he certainly underwhelmed as a scorer and as a shooter, But I think in the other regards, whether it's the playmaking and connectivity as a role player offensively, just doing the little things and buying into the role, I think he's largely been solid in what I expected for a $6 million player who's likely coming off of the bench playing 18 to 22 minutes a night. But that'll do it for today's show. We are about 24 hours away from the NBA tipping off, the Lakers being back, and us having real results and real games to talk about, real things to break down and analyze and extrapolate. And excited for tomorrow's game against the Warriors and to go live after that and then have content throughout the week leading into the Minnesota game. So be on the lookout for all of that. But I appreciate you guys. For those watching on YouTube, please be sure to hit that subscribe button, turn on channel notifications, and like and comment on this video. On the road to 50K subscribers by the end of 2025 would mean the world if you hit that subscribe button. And for those listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice, please be sure to follow, download, and leave a 5-star review. I'll be back tomorrow. I will talk to you then.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.